Welcome to another episode of Photo Geek Weekly. This is, June 6th, and we're recording episode number 71 here, the podcast of photo geekery and technology geekery as it relates to photography. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Don Komarechka, and with me, I always got a guest host, a co-pilot, if you were. Today is a guy that I know knows his stuff about specific areas of photography, technology, and specifically about our first story. So I brought in Joseph Lanashke, aka Photo Joseph, to be the guest today. Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And it's been a while since we've talked, and I know that you've got your YouTube channel that is going like crazy right now, and you've got a bunch of other stuff going on too. So, what's new in the Photo Joseph sphere?
Well, like you said, the YouTube channel is always always good fun and games. So, youtube.com/photojoseph, just building that up, getting the good word out about photography and video technique and gear, kind of a thing. Having lots of fun with that. I've just been doing a fair amount of client work as well. I've actually got a little mini workshop coming up. Have you ever heard of Adorama Inspire?
I have, actually. Truth be told, you told me about this yesterday. So yes, I heard about it then. But I did hear about it before that point as well.
So Adorama Inspire is an event in New York put on by Adorama, the store. And I'm going to be leading a photo walk there. It's actually going to be really cool. We've got this BMX rider that we're going out in the streets with. He's going to do tricks in the streets, so we're going to do photography of that with the S1. And we actually have a couple of loaner S1s with us, so if anybody wants to get their hands on one of those, that will be fun to play with. And I'm also going to be on a panel, and this is going to be really interesting. The Fronos Photo?
Oh, yes. Jared Pullen.
He is hosting a panel, and the topic is, are you a real photographer if you teach online? I can't wait to challenge this one. So I'm looking forward to that. So for anybody who wants to go, check it out. It's adorama.com/inspire. It is June 18th to 20th. So it's just a couple weeks away. And hopefully I'll see some of your listeners out there.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. If you do end up going and you see Mr. Lanashke, tell him I sent you that you're a listener to Photo Geek Weekly. I'd be curious to see how many listeners would make that connection. But anyhow, great to have you here. Before we get into our stories, I do want to make one quick note of my own, and that's just a heartfelt thank you to everybody that listens to this podcast that has supported my upcoming macro photography book project on Kickstarter. So if you listen to the previous episode, I kind of announced it, and as soon as I finished recording, I hit the go live button or the launch button, whatever it said. And we needed a funding goal of $30,000 to do a press run. And we hit that goal in a day and a half of the 45-day campaign. And so we are a week in now, and we are over $52,000.
Wow.
So I am just in awe. I don't even know what to say at this point. We're into our stretch goals where I'm going to be recording videos for every chapter of the book. When I hit 60,000, I've got a big paper sample book that I want to hopefully upgrade the paper quality to have a brighter white paper, something that has a higher opacity so that you don't see through from one page to the next, just better quality overall. But it's shocking how much that costs to for like a 2 to 5% perceived increase that not a lot of people will even notice. It's a significantly higher price point. So I'm just thrilled by all the support. And if you haven't supported the project yet, I'll put a link in the show notes again. I can see on the Kickstarter campaign that a lot of people did come in through the show notes at photogeekweekly.com because they give me a little referrer list to see where people came in from. So to everybody that has contributed so far, thank you so much. And let's keep this going to make it the best project it can possibly be. All right, I'll get off my soapbox or whatever it is.
Now, well, congratulations on that. That really is awesome.
Thank you. I fully expected it to take us the 45 days to get close to the threshold, and I'm humbled by the fact that it happened so quickly. And there's going to be some extra publicity. You might hear my voice on some other podcasts if you listen around the web, and hopefully I don't sound like a broken record. I try to switch things up, and you'll see articles from me posted on, there's one on Petapixel now, and hopefully F-Stoppers and DP Review will pick up some stuff that I'm writing, all in a an effort to keep the momentum going for this. And that's going to be it's going to be fun to see where this will go. It'll be out for Christmas of this year. All right. So, Joseph, I wanted to bring you on because the news of the week, that the primary story here broke late last week, and it is, I mean, it's reported everywhere, but the link that I found here was from Petapixel, titled Panasonic Unveils the S1H, the first 6K mirrorless camera. Yes, cue the chorus of singing angels for such a product. Now, you know, we're both Lumix ambassadors, so I mean, let's just state that right away.
Fair enough.
And so we, you know, we have you know, a bias, I guess, just based on that. But you look at the specs that have been announced for this camera, and this is just like an unveiling announcement. I'm sure we'll get more details later. It's not like we have a PDF of the manual to flip through and get all the little niche, obscure bits and pieces of information here. But they hit us with all the stuff that really matters right off the bat. And so we're going to be shooting 6K. If you're in a 3x2 aspect ratio at 24 frames per second, or 5.9K at a 16x9 ratio, which is the more traditional movie format, up to 30 frames per second there. So why don't you take it from that point into a little bit more of the details that we know about. But what I care about, and I think what the listeners generally care about, Joseph, is why a camera like this will be useful to somebody over and above the S1, which is also getting some upgrades as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a great question. So it's the main specs that you laid out. Those are the two big things. Your full 6K, which is just insane, 24P at a 3:2 aspect ratio. And so a lot of people might say, well, why would you shoot in 3:2? That doesn't make sense. Of course, you're shooting widescreen. There's two things about shooting in that aspect ratio. One of them is anamorphic. You put an anamorphic lens on and you are basically squeezing the image, a wider image, into a more square aspect ratio, which will then be stretched out in post. And you can put the widest anamorphic lens is a 2:1 stretch, which means when you take the 6K footage, drop it on a timeline and stretch it, you know, or stretch it, I should say, into its native format, that'll be a 12K equivalent image. It's not 12K pixels, but it'll be a 12K image on the timeline, which is just insane. That is so cool. So that's one of the things. So that's one extreme use of it. But you could also shoot in a 3:2 and have what is called open gate. And open gate essentially means that instead of shooting a 16x9 shot, you shoot a larger shot that you can not just punch into, but actually pan and scan. You can slide the frame up and down, side to side, and really reframe the shot with a lot more options than you normally would have. Now, that is very high-end use. You know, this is really cinematographer land right here. It's pretty phenomenal to be shooting that big on a full frame sensor with that is whatever, I guess it's near almost Academy size, very close to Academy size. So this is a major, major camera. The much more useful to more people one is the second one you mentioned, the 5.9K at 16x9 ratio. So nearly 6K. And that one goes 30P, and that's where most people are going to be shooting, is 30P. And even that gives you the ability to punch into the shot. So if your objective is to deliver in 4K, if you shoot 4K right now, to deliver in 4K, you don't have any room to punch into the shot. You can't reframe. You can't cut around a talking mistake on camera. If you're doing an interview, you can't cut around that without just having a hard cut. A workaround for that, if you're shooting 4K editing in HD, is to punch into the shot, reframe a little bit, so it almost looks like a different camera angle. But now you'll be able to do that and still deliver in 4K. So you can shoot 5.9K, deliver 4K, and have the ability to punch in and reframe, which is just a phenomenal, phenomenal thing.
Yeah, and you know, I think that 4K is becoming more and more of a deliverable standard. I've worked on some documentary films where I think most of the footage was shot in 4K, and they mastered it in 4K, but the end client was only asking for a 1080p deliverable.
Right.
But I mean, we had the ability to create something better, and so I mean, why not do that from a master perspective?
Sure.
Because it's there, and then it was 1080p as the final to the customer. But now it's pretty much 4K, 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 and so we had the flexibility of like, I mean, of course, time lapse footage is still, so you have have obscene resolution there in comparison. But if you were shooting 4K, you would then have that ability to punch into the video, reframe things, especially a lot of the stuff that I do is macro photography. And the exact framing of where your subject is going to be in your frame can be rather chaotic. It can change so drastically. And so having a little bit of extra wiggle room could be useful in that sense. And so again, onward and upward in terms of resolution. Yeah, there are 8K cameras on the market for high-end cinematographers, but they'll also come with a price that's probably a heck of a lot higher than what we'd be looking at for something in the S1 series.
Oh yeah, you're talking about adding another zero to the price tag.
Exactly. So, I mean, to have these levels of cinema features at our fingertips within a camera that would probably be a fairly serviceable stills camera, too, just like the GH5S is. I used it to photograph some snowflakes this past wintertime because I had it for a video project that I was working on. And yeah, it's only 12 megapixels, but they're really high quality megapixels.
Right.
So I enjoyed that and I did some fun shooting with that, even though it was predominantly a video camera.
Well, so, the S1H, as far as I know, the resolution is, I believe, the same as the S1, the pixel resolution. They haven't
announced it yet, but if you're talking about 6K, it makes sense that it's in that ballpark. It might not be the exact same number, but let's just say that it's comparable. It's an apples kind of thing.
Right. It's at least 6K wide. It has to be, or else it wouldn't be able to shoot 6K. So.
Yeah. So in this sense, we've got an upgrade to that S1 as well. So we're going to get Vlog, which is in the S1H, as well as unlimited recording and 14 plus stops of dynamic range. But that Vlog capability is now coming to the S1 as a paid firmware upgrade. So that will, if you're trying to match footage, this is what it's really useful for. If you've got multiple cameras that are all shooting footage for the same movie, documentary, project, whatever it is, you want to have some level of consistency across the board. But if the camera is applying a tone curve to create a nice contrasty, punchy image, but another camera is doing that, but in a slightly different way, and so on and so forth, it's really hard to undo that when you get the footage into your whatever your post-processing workflow is. So the idea would be you create a duller, blander initial starting point for the image that you can then grade however you'd like on the assumption that there's going to be some level of consistency in that blandness that you can then, you know, punch your blacks down to whatever level you want and change your contrast and all of your, you know, colors to be consistent to what you want. Everything is consistent across the way when you're shooting with a Vlog type of scenario. And so again, for cinematographers, not just for somebody doing home videos, that's not really going to be useful for you. So don't bundle that into the price of the camera. Have that as an add-on for those people that will find that as a useful tool, and you can go out and add that to your kit.
Yeah, absolutely. It also gives you more dynamic range, and that's an important part of it too, is you do get more dynamic range. You get more of the shadow, more of the highlight detail when you're shooting in Vlog than you do when you're not. So yeah, having that curve not applied, the gamma curve not applied, as you described, it's a great way to look at it, is super helpful. It's very powerful.
And this is all going to be this year, right? So this is 2019 stuff.
The Vlog update is coming next month in July.
Right.
And it's also, I want to point out too, you mentioned that it's a paid upgrade, but at least in the United States, and I know every country, every region is going to have their own deal, but in the US, you'll be able to get that upgrade for free until June 22nd. Is that right? Something like that. June 22nd sounds wrong because that's before the update comes out. But anyway,
there'll be a window of time.
There's a window of time where you can get that update for free. So that is awesome.
Yeah. And I can imagine that there's a lot of research and development cost on the back end to create this as an update. That's why they're making it like a non-standard thing. And to give that away for free, I mean, that's a great commitment from Panasonic to their camera users here, building out this whole ecosystem. So hooray, onward and upward. There was also some other announcements, teleconverters for the S series. Was it the 10 to 25 f1.7 lens for Micro Four Thirds? Panasonic has come out with
that lens.
Oh, it looks big, but in the videos that I saw of people handling it, they were all commenting on how light it felt compared to its physical size. So that was very promising as well.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, it's incredible. I've seen some test footage out of it. It just looks stunning. it's a
I can't wait
lens.
To do some night photography, some time lapse stuff, some star trails, and what have you with that. It would be the perfect lens for it, in my opinion.
Got it.
So news from Panasonic, and I know that we're kind of on the clock here because you've got to disappear for another engagement soon. So we're gonna kind of go lightning round through our stories this week, and the next one, you know, if we're shooting 4K, that's great. We got a lot of 4K displays. 6K and 8K monitors have been rare, let's call it, because they've been so expensive. Now we've got some mainstream adoption of at least 6K displays, where Apple has just announced its brand new, unbelievably beautiful display will be 6K. And they're designing this, of course, for people that are going to be purchasing the new Mac Pro, although I'm sure you could use this with any computer. It doesn't have to be just their new offerings, so long as you've got a graphics card that is capable of supporting it, even on a PC.
Sure.
And of course, their announcement of their new Mac Pros, which I think it's been 6 years since the previous refresh of the garbage can style one.
This is a tragic nickname for that.
Well, you know what? It was a really innovative design. It just happened to look like a trash can. Yeah. And they'll never live it down. Now this one is the new Mac Pro is looking like it's going back to its roots, like an old G4, G5 series.
The G5
Mac.
Series, yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, are you a Mac or a PC user?
Oh, I'm Mac. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm a PC. Right. I've always have been, although the specs that Apple is putting into some of this new hardware is really quite impressive for people that need it. Right. And so if you are
good qualifier.
The person that needs 6K or even 8K footage for whatever project you're working on, you're going to have a client that is willing to pay for that.
Right.
But they're also going to have to pay for the hardware to render all of that. And you're going to need to have a display capable of showing you almost pixel to pixel comparity. And you'll also have to have ridiculous amounts of hardware if you want to be editing stuff like this in real time. And so that's what Apple has built into its Mac Pro. And you know what? There's not going to be a big market for this.
The
pricing for these new Macs, they can go up to something like $30,000 if you click all the checkboxes along the way. They will sell a handful of them at that price point to individuals, but to large production studios that are still using Macs, then they'll just be buying these by the dozen almost.
Yep.
Because of the power that they're able to put into that. But predominantly then, for us that care about displaying things, what do you think about the display announcement? A nice 6K panel from Apple seems to check all the boxes for me, aside from price.
Well, it's definitely spendy, but I think just like with the Mac itself, if you are, like you said, if you tick all the boxes, I've seen estimates closer to $40,000, and that's US dollars of what it's going to cost to max this thing out.
Right.
And that makes sense. I mean, a terabyte and a half of RAM. Come on. like, wait, what? and remember, those are Apple price for the RAM. So, you know, that's, it's definitely going to be up there. But I just had this discussion on Twitter with somebody. That price point, while for the mere mortal, that is just outrageous and way out of reach, and there's no way you could ever afford that. The kind of people who actually need that power, someone who needs to be able to edit 3 8K ProRes RAW streams in real time, that amount of budget is just going to be a line item. That computer's a line item on their budget for a production. The cameras themselves will cost so much more than the camera.
Like, even if you look at reference monitors, okay, it's like if you wanted to get a reference monitor in like 4K, 6K right. resolution, you'd be paying $35,000 to $55,000 for correct. A display, right? And so when you see these large production houses that need this kind of stuff to be the best of the best, and yeah, these are movies that make those millions of dollars at the box office, then this is hardware for them.
Yep.
Now, the display, the 6K monitor, clocks in a dollar less than 5,000 US. And that's without the fancy new reflection phobic glass.
Yes.
Which would cost you an extra $1,000. Or if you want the stand for
the stand, it. The stand is about $1,000.
Yeah, the stand is optional at around a grand as well. So if you want to fully deck yourself out with a 6K monitor, you'd be looking at around $6,000 to $7,000. Now, I bought it's an Asus ProArt 4K monitor. And I love the pro art line from Asus, however you pronounce it. And it's done me really well. They've made an upgrade to it, but I never really saw the reason to buy it because it was just incremental. Mm-hmm. But if they were to Asus or any of the other higher end but affordable monitor manufacturers, HP, NEC, if they were to come out with a 6K panel, because Apple doesn't make the panel, they make the entire finished product, but the actual panel inside of this is from some unknown manufacturer. I know Samsung makes a lot of this stuff. Panasonic does as well. Sony makes a lot of a lot of these panels. So whoever makes it will probably have an exclusivity with Apple. They've done that in the past. I have no idea how that moves forward, but that's only for a limited period of time, and they might make variants of it for third-party manufacturers that I would love to get my hands on, because $7,000 is too much. If you were to cut that in half and maybe give me a rebate or something, then I'm all for it. I'll buy one right away, and we'll get there. The prices will come down. That's just what technology does.
I think it's worth pointing out too that this is not just that it's 6K. It doesn't cost that because it's a 6K monitor. It costs that because of all the other technology that goes into it. It happens to be 6K, but it is about XHDR? Is that what it's called?
XDR, yeah.
XDR, yeah. The Extreme HDR, the brightness of it, it's an incredibly bright display that can maintain that brightness for an infinite amount of time. It's a really, really, really high-end display, way more than just the fact that it's 6,000.
Well, that's why when you have reference monitors, the reason why they cost so much is because they are the best possible display. Right. They have, we talk about dynamic range on cameras, but you know, our displays have dynamic range and how much they can show us in the shadows and the highlights as well at any given time. And so if you have the highest quality, including removing reflections, et cetera, then there is there's a market for that. Not just in professional imaging, but in medical imaging as well, like ISO, however you pronounce them. They make a whole series of high-end monitors for both professionals in cinematography and medical fields, and there is a big price tag associated with them.
Sure.
Now, as a photographer, you don't need that. It might be a want, but it's far more than a line item for most photographers' budgets. So once that distills down a little bit into a product that I would consider buying, then I think we'll bring up this discussion again. But Apple hitting the high-end market, you know, kudos to Apple for knowing that it's not going to be huge sales, but there is an industry that that needs their support. Because if Apple doesn't produce the products, nobody can buy it, no matter how much money they want to throw at Apple. So there we go. There's our Apple coverage for the day. Next story is, this one was, to me, I don't know, somber but expected, and it's just another nail in the coffin. Sports Illustrated has been sold for $110 million. And you know, the Petapixel article...
Is it just me, or is that chump change?
I mean,
it seem really cheap for a brand.
It seems
that
like, I mean, especially for like the brand name alone, it seems low considering what it might have been worth even 10 years ago. Yeah. And the Petapixel article says to be milked via brand licensing, a la Kodak and Polaroid and other brands that photographers might be associated with. So Bloomberg is reporting that Meredith Corporation has agreed to sell the sports magazine to the New York-based brand management company Authentic Brands Group. Now, if I go back a couple of years, and it didn't take me a long time to find a story on this from thestar.com, that Sports Illustrated lays off its entire photography staff January 23rd of 2015. So march forward a little over 4 years, you know, Illustrated is in their name, right? And they laid off their entire photography staff. You know what? I wouldn't be investing into a company like this. At the time, Sports Illustrated was owned by Time Inc., so Time Magazine and that group. So I have no idea when Meredith acquired them, but it looks like it's just been changing hands and becoming less and less valuable as time goes on. Joseph, is there any future in print? Like, could you see a magazine that is struggling today? Maybe they can pay their staff, but they're hoping things get better. 10 years from now, still in business?
That's tough. I mean, print is very, very hard to justify these days. It still is very nice to see a printed image, but it's not like the print magazines are the quality of, let's say, your book, your macro photography book. You know, that's going to be very specialized, very high-end quality print. These are, they're, it's nice to see it in print, but you know what? The image looks better on screen. The image looks better on your iPad. And it's so hard to imagine a future where magazines are around for much longer other than some kind of specialty uses. I don't even know.
Yeah. Well, sad, and how do they make money online, right? I mean, there, some people put up a paywall and then their subscribership just goes to almost zero. And then they can make money on advertisements, but that doesn't exist like it did before.
Well, it doesn't have to be just an online as in a web page. It can be a digital magazine. It can still be that. You know, you've got like Wired, for example, you can get the Wired issue electronically and you have everything that's in the print magazine. Plus, you know, you get more pictures, you get movies embedded, you get behind the scenes, you get more stuff than you can fit into the magazine and things that don't work in the print form. It's hard to say there's anything that works in print that doesn't work on screen, while there's a million things that work on screen that don't work in print.
Now, I mean, what are we going to get? Like a Sports Illustrated clothing wear lineup? I mean, shoes? What is this possibly? I know, like, when Polaroid was being, you know, licensed off to anything, you could buy portable DVD players for your car that had the Polaroid branding on it, sunglasses. In fact, in Bulgaria, where we go back every summer, it's where my wife's from originally, and we see in the coastal city of Varna, where we spend most of our time, there's Polaroid branded sunglass stores still in operation, and they're doing quite well for themselves. There's three of them that I know of in that city alone. Maybe a bar, a Sports Illustrated bar, like a restaurant or something. But even that, that's a one trick pony. I don't see how this brand could possibly be licensed into anything else. As soon as they let their photographers go, that was it. Yeah, you know, everything has been downhill from there. And now this is just that final stop. You know, it's lost all of its grandeur. It's just a name now, just a memory for the most part. And it's a shame. It is. But that's the way the industry's going. That's when I was writing for Outdoor Photography Canada magazine. I loved it. And they were on a shoestring budget and they closed down earlier this year. And I had some great years writing for them. And I mean, I didn't get paid a lot for it. But even with a very small overhead, a magazine has a very hard time running today because print costs go higher. Funding, sometimes they're supported by government grants. Sometimes they're just by the subscription and the advertising. But that never seems to add up to enough anymore these days. And so farewell, Sports Illustrated. I mean, sure, they're still being owned by somebody. They still exist. But I'm going to say my goodbye right now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. Final story, as we're running through here quicker than usual. Hope the listeners don't mind. And this one, I kind of want to lend more to your voice because I'm not an American. And this is a story about American, I don't want to say politics, but you know, police from F-Stoppers. Mm-hmm. Miami police handcuff photographer, take camera and phone for attempting to take pictures at an accident scene.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time that this sort of stuff has happened. These stories will come up every couple of months where a photographer is documenting the work of law enforcement from the sidelines at a distance, and the police overreact and do things that infringe on the rights of the photographer. Even if they were just a bystander with a phone, let's call them a photographer, and that type of stuff has happened too. What are your thoughts on this story specifically and the prevalence of this moving forward? Because I think that this is happening more and more frequently.
Sure.
Maybe it's just that we're hearing about it more. Maybe this was happening in the film era too, but it just never got any buzz about it.
Yeah. I mean, well, with anything, we always hear about it more today because of social media and the 24-hour news cycle. But regardless of whether it's happening more or not, it clearly is not okay. And never has something like this happened and the end result came out to be, yes, that was legal. That was okay to do. It isn't, right? It's your public property, like you said, the police are public servants. We have the right to do that. Now, the police have the right to ask you to stop, but when you're standing in public space, if you're, you know, if you're in their way, if you're causing any kind of issue, any kind of problem with what it is they're trying to do, then at that point, they have the right to arrest you. It's not because you're shooting, it's because you are being a problem. but this is clearly not okay. And it's really important that every time it does happen, that the news gets out there and people get upset about it. Because if we don't, then it will become normal and it will become legal, God forbid. So, you know, we're not North Korea yet, but let's try to keep it that way. It's just insane. It's incredible that this sort of thing is happening.
Well, and we had the 30th anniversary of Tiananmen Square recently, and yep. Now I've just been banned in China for saying that. So, yep. Photojournalism revealed some very powerful things. I mean, I've said Tank Man on this podcast before, so it was probably already banned in China. those moments were captured from photojournalists trying to reveal the truth of the matter. And I don't care who Jacob Cattell was as a photographer, what he did in terms of whether he was a paparazzi or a commercial photographer, wedding photographer, sports. I don't care. He was a photographer that came across this scene and wanted to document it. He could have been documenting the heroic acts of the police or firefighters or first responders of any kind, right? And these acts of heroism are important to document and to remember.
Sure.
The date that we're recording this is the 75th anniversary of D-Day. We had a lot of heroes there that day that, they fought for us to be able to sit here and talk about stuff like this today, you know, have the mm-hmm. freedom that photographers do to just be artists and to live in the world that has come from all of those sacrifices. So police, they should look at the public as their friends and their allies, not their enemies. If there is something to scrutinize about your work as a police officer, that says more about you than it does about the public trying to document that.
Yeah, no
and
doubt.
We should be 100% transparent about this stuff. Again, I'm a Canadian and I'm talking about American stuff here. So I don't really have a right because I don't get to vote. I can't email or phone up a member of U.S. Congress and have my voice mean anything because these are the people that make the laws. But
it is still important that people outside of this country have a word to say about that and have an opinion about it, because it's not just an American right, it's a human right. You know, that's that type of an argument. And there's things all over the world that we get involved in and we say you shouldn't do it that way. We as Americans, we get involved in, or as Canadians as well. And we get into foreign affairs and say, no, that's not right. You're not doing it fairly. The laws in this country need to change, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's, it's just as important that we keep the right to free press, the right to be able to stand on the street and photograph the police officer doing his job, because like you said, they shouldn't be doing anything wrong. They shouldn't have a problem being photographed. And ironically, I think from reading that story, the photographer was quite literally there to document what the police were doing as a way to show off the heroism of the police force. And that really backfired, didn't it?
Yeah, it would. Now, I completely agree. If there's a sensitive matter in the scene, say like if somebody's died or there's evidence that is clearly visible that the police might want to keep private because it's an ongoing investigation and there are certain things that they don't want to make public, they can let you know that. They can put up a barrier that keeps you far enough away that you won't be able to see any of that stuff. Yeah. There are things that they can do aside from arresting you. So
yeah.
That is the state of things. And whenever this type of stuff comes up, I want to give it a wider audience, a louder voice, because we need to defend the rights, not of photographers, but of everybody to live in a world where the freedoms that we hold so dear are kept free and not infringed upon. All right.
You got it.
So that was deep. I tried to keep like the last story like lighthearted and fun, but there wasn't a whole lot of fun stuff in the news cycle this week. Before we get into our picks, Joseph, I know you got to run, but where can people find your YouTube channel and subscribe, and what kind of stuff do you have upcoming?
Yeah, thank you. So it's Photo Joseph absolutely everywhere. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, it's all Photo Joseph. YouTube as well, youtube.com/Photo Joseph. If you haven't seen the show there, come on by, subscribe, please hit that little bell. Enjoy the show. I actually have kind of scaled back from the live shows a bit just so that I can do more deeper shows, more advanced shows. The last couple of videos that I've released were edited in advance and took a fair amount of effort to put together. So quite happy with those. And of course, there's Adorama Inspire. So adorama.com/inspire. That's the next workshop that I'll be at where I'll be publicly speaking. So please come by and check that out if you're able.
And I watched a video on your YouTube channel yesterday. You pointed me towards it for your pick of the week. Mm-hmm. And it's very tempting because I already have one of the components required to make this work. So what is your pick?
Okay, so the backstory here is the Lumix S1 camera, which as we know is a full-frame camera with the L-mount, which is not a new mount, but there are not that many L-mount lenses in existence. L-mount lenses are made by Leica, very, very expensive. There's a few of them out from Panasonic now, there's more from Panasonic coming, and there's a bunch from Sigma that are coming, but there aren't that many out right now that you can buy. So the whole video you're talking about, I did a video about how to adapt other lenses to the L-mount. And it turns out you can adapt a lot of lenses to the L-mount. All of your Canon EF glass, your Nikon F-mount, plus a bunch of other stuff can all be adapted to it. So in some regards, you have more lenses available for the S-series than you do for pretty much any other camera out there. Now, with that said, the one that is my pick of the week was kind of ridiculous, but it's so much fun. So the lens itself, it's a two-parter, as you said. The lens itself is a Mamiya lens, an old 80mm f1.9 Mamiya lens. And that is a Mamiya lens for the medium format for 6.45. So to adapt that to the S series, it's not just a mount adapter, it's actually a focal reducer. So you put on a 0.7x focal reducer, and that's the second half of it. A company that makes it is called Kipon. And of course, you're going to have links to this all in the show notes. But that will do a 0.7x focal reduction, and it makes it a, well, shoot, now a 55mm f1.33, I think it was right.
I was going to say around f1.4, but it doesn't. We don't have to be terribly specific. But
but it's not just the focal length and the aperture. It's just the look of the lens. It is very creamy, has this beautiful bokeh to it. It's weird kind of ring swirly bokeh to it. It's not super, super sharp, but it's got this dreaminess to it that is just, I love it. It's fabulous. So it's a great combination. And the focal reducer actually costs more than the lenses do on eBay right now. But what are you going
to
do?
Well, and these costs will come down. I mean, I had to buy the NovoFlex adapter to put my EF lenses on the L-mount because the Sigma adapter wasn't available on the market yet. And I had pre-production cameras that I really wanted to have some fun with. So I paid through the nose for that thing. And you know, it barely worked. In fact, it didn't even work on my early samples just because the firmware wasn't supporting it properly.
Right.
And I had to tape over the electrical contacts so that it was just like a pure dumb adapter.
Oh, geez.
And of course, it's gotten better, but the Sigma one is by far the one that I would recommend anybody to buy now.
Yeah,
and
the MC21 is the Sigma model. That one actually gives you autofocus. The NovaFlex one does not give you autofocus on the S-series cameras, which is crazy because it costs almost three times as much as the Sigma. So, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so my pick is for any Windows user, specifically, and this is kind of narrowing the market down, people using Windows 10 that have updated to the May 2019 update. That's version 1903. Microsoft has released a RAW image extension. And so this will allow, if you have RAW files of any camera supported by the LibRAW, I guess that's what they're using as the engine here. And that was last updated April of 2018. So we've got stuff like the GH5 and the G9 and GX9 for Panasonic, as well as most of the cameras that were announced and released at that time, including some afterwards that were still using the same file extension like .cr2 for Canon, but not .cr3, which is what they're using for the EOS R and newer cameras. So if you want to see a thumbnail preview of your RAW files instead of just a dumb little symbol and be able to click on it and open up the RAW file in like the Windows Photo Viewer just to take a look at it to make sure you've got the right file before you send it off into whatever RAW processor you want, that is now free from Microsoft, so long as you are using the latest version of Windows. And I'm going to assume that as soon as LibRAW decides to update for newer cameras, this extension will get updated as well. So this is just sort of a public service announcement for Nikon, for Windows users that you have a new little tool for you yourself to explore. So, all right, I think that winds us down. One of the shorter episodes here. I know that we're sort of on the clock with our co-host having to jump off to another webinar. But Joseph, thank you so much for being on. And
thank you.
We got to connect again more often. It's always great to have your opinions.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. And with all of that said, thanks again for people that have contributed to the book project. Those links will be in the show notes as well. And now it's time to get out and shoot.